implications of the COVID Act. And my colleague Björn Rickenbach is going to conclude the press conference with a summary. And with that, I allow pass the floor to my colleague.
Dear audience, media representative, my name is Kadi Schippers. I studied pharmacy in Zurich and work in the Swiss branch of a global pharmaceutical company for more than 10 years, first in market authorization, then in the medical department. Alitalia attaches great importance to communicating and acting in a scientifically correct way, in a fact-based manner. Based on this guiding principle, we would like to present to you a scientific update on the contents of the COVID certificate. In the next 10 minutes, I'm going to summarize the current data on vaccination, the first G of the COVID certificate. References to my statements can be found in the press release on the Alitalia website. On the 8th of July, Alitalia sent an open letter to Swissmedic requesting that the temporary authorization of the COVID vaccines be suspended immediately, as we have come to the conclusion of the comprehensive analysis that these vaccines are ineffective, unsafe and unnecessary, and also clearly do not meet the formal requirements for temporary authorization. Our various questions sent to the regulator have not been answered to date. Normally, the development of a drug takes 10 to 15 years. The COVID vaccines were approved based on 2 months' data. The basis for the approval of drugs, and even a vaccine, is formally a drug, at least in Switzerland. So, the basis is usually prospective randomized double-blind studies, double-blind meaning that neither the study participants nor the physicians involved in the study know who is being administered a serum, that is, a vaccine, or a placebo. The phase 3 trials of the mRNA COVID vaccines were only observer-blinded, meaning that study participants were informed whether they were in the vaccine or the placebo group. And this leads to possible influence on the reporting of symptoms. Does a subject who feels safe because he or she knows that they received the vaccine, do they interpret symptoms such as headache or aching limbs as side effects? And do the same symptoms cause a subject in a placebo group to perform a PCR test because they suspect they have COVID? I think it must be assumed that this is the case. If double-blinding is deliberately done without, and if such studies are accepted by the authorities as a basis for approval, it has to be assumed that medical science, ethics, and the welfare of the population are not appreciated so highly. On effectiveness now, the approvals of the COVID vaccines were granted worldwide based on the so-called primary efficacy endpoint, a mild COVID disease. This is medically, socially, and epidemiologically irrelevant, as trivial events such as a sore throat, headaches, or fever are restored in combination with a positive PCR test, and thus it is only investigated whether the vaccine reduces these compared with the placebo. So to what extent should a vaccine that only reduces minor events and not even to a relevant extent, to what extent should that vaccine help us in a pandemic? Next slide. In the Pfizer-BioNTech pivotal trial, mild COVID disease occurred in just 8 out of 21,720 study participants in the vaccine group, which is 0.04%, and in 162 out of 21,728 study participants in the placebo group, which is 0.74%. For the Moderna vaccine, the numbers were in a similar range. deaths in both pivotal studies, mild COVID disease was documented in only about 1% of the study participants. If we calculate the absolute risk reduction based on these figures, the absolute risk reduction for the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine is 0.7% and for the Moderna vaccine, 1.23%. And such small values are not very effective in the media and raise the question how effective the vaccine really is. So, using a trick, relative risk reduction, the efficacy is inflated. This is actually 95% for the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine because out of a total of 170 events, the 162 in the placebo group corresponding to 95% are formally prevented. However, it is not 95 out of 100 vaccinated people who get protected, but 143 people have to be vaccinated in order to prevent a single mild COVID disease. And similarly, a 100% efficacy is even proclaimed for the use of vaccines in adolescents because mild COVID disease occurred in 16 subjects in the placebo group versus 0 subjects in the vaccine group out of a total of 2,260 study participants. Even with the occurrence of 1 versus 0 cases, the efficacy would be 100%. So therefore, without contextual information, the relative risk reduction cannot be validly interpreted. However, it is exactly this contextual information that has been withheld from the public by the government and the media for the past 20 months. So to date, no solid prospective study has demonstrated that a vaccine also reduces severe causes, hospitalizations or deaths. Severe COVID diseases were only studied in a secondary efficacy endpoint of little relevance to market authorization. For severe COVID diseases, the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine is claimed to have an efficacy of 66.4% because 1 such case occurred in the vaccine group and 3 in the placebo group. Considering the more than 40,000 study participants, however, these figures are in the realm of statistical chance, and it is frivolous, unscientific, and misleading to claim on this basis that the vaccine reduces severe causes. On the 30th of September 2021, an analysis from Harvard University was published in the prestigious European Journal of Epidemiology, which examined data from 68 countries and 2,947 administrative districts in the US. It concludes that vaccination should be reconsidered as the primary measure to alleviate the current situation, since in countries with a higher vaccination coverage rate, there are no fewer new COVID cases, but even an opposite positive trend. The results are first ignored in the public media, then put into perspective, because they question the narrative of the highly effective vaccines. If the vaccine were truly effective, shouldn't the vaccination coverage rate have a clear negative correlation with the incidence of new cases? Arguably, the data confirm what the pivotal studies have already suggested, the COVID vaccines are ineffective. Now, on safety. As of the 30th October, over 1 million vaccine adverse events have been recorded in the EU. About 1/3 of these were serious adverse events, and almost 17,000 were vaccine-related deaths. Around 12,000 cases involved adverse reactions in adolescents, of which 38% were serious. There were 54 vaccine-related deaths in children. The American Vaccine Adverse Event Database currently records 2,433 deaths of unborn children of vaccinated pregnant women. Studies on which the vaccination recommendation of pregnant women is based have revealed serious errors. While the marketing authorization holders also currently recommend that the administration of vaccines in pregnancy should only be considered if the potential benefits outweigh the possible risks for mother and fetus, generous vaccination recommendations are made worldwide and also in Switzerland. Upon request, the marketing authorization holders were unable to provide studies that provide concrete evidence of the benefits for pregnant women. In order to correctly classify all these numbers of recorded side effects, it must be taken into account that it has been proven that less than 5% of side effects were reported in the past. But what factor do we have to multiply these figures with to get close to reality? By 20, 100, by more? Next slide, please. Current data show that Switzerland ranks last among European countries when it comes to reporting side effects, while countries like Denmark, the Netherlands, and Sweden disclose a high rate of side effects. Switzerland ranks 17th behind countries such as Latvia, Italy, Portugal, and France. Preclinical studies have shown that spike proteins activate the coagulation system. Thromboses, embolisms, and strokes are among the frequently recorded side effects. If a loss or reduction of vision occurs, the possibility of a thrombosis in the eye should always be considered. Other frequently recorded side effects include palsy, bleeding, and heart diseases such as pericarditis or myocarditis. The latter are observed with varying frequency, especially in male adolescents and young adults. The currently recorded adverse events represent a short period of time only. The frequency of vaccine-associated exacerbations of rare diseases, cancer, or autoimmune diseases in the medium and long term remains to be seen. Adolescents and children seem more susceptible to side effects overall. Since they still have their whole lives ahead of them, they have much more to lose than adults. Now, regarding the necessity, to date, no hard scientific facts point to an epidemic or pandemic during the last 20 months. Contrary to media and government reports, neither hospital beds nor intensive care beds in particular have been exceptionally busy during the last 20 months. Nor has any relevant excess mortality been observed, if calculated correctly. So to what extent have therapies with supposedly effective drugs or even invasive ventilation driven up mortality in COVID patients? The evidence used to justify their use is often astonishingly thin. So-called baseline characteristics were not balanced or studies were financed by questionable institutions. Effective and inexpensive therapies such as hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin were available for the treatment of COVID. The data situation is being ignored by the authorities. The marketing authorization holder for ivermectin is Merck. Merck will soon launch an expensive drug, molnupiravir, for the treatment of COVID. A more detailed analysis of benefits and risks raises questions. Preclinical data suggests that molnupiravir is mutagenic, meaning it can alter genetic material. And Pfizer is also planning to launch another expensive drug soon that is supposed to minimize severe causes of COVID. So, the COVID vaccination is ineffective, unsafe, and unnecessary. It is even more unnecessary and unsafe to be administered a booster vaccination from this at a regular interval, which potentiates the side effects. On the 2nd of November, an article was published in the British Medical Journal that revealed serious deficiencies in the conduct of the pivotal trial of Pfizer's vaccine at study sites in the United States. These findings do not only call in question the integrity of the study itself, but also its discoveries, and thus the basis for market authorization. Usually, such serious discoveries by the marketing authorization holders or the health authorities trigger extensive investigations, and a drug in question is withdrawn from market until more results are available. So why do the marketing authorization holders and health authorities remain silent? Stefan Ehrers, member of the Board of Fire, said at the last World Health Summit that the pandemic had opened people's eyes to innovations and that only 2 years ago, 95% of people would have rejected a cell or gene therapy. Well, were we now sold a gene therapy as vaccination? Well, to be honest, the task of our government seems to be difficult. The unvaccinated ought to be convinced that the vaccination works, so they get vaccinated at the same time. Vaccinated people ought to be convinced that the vaccination does not work, so that they can be boosted. Let's hope that more and more people recognize the obvious contradictions. I would now like to thank you for your attention, ladies and gentlemen, and I would now like to hand over to Thomas Binder.
Dear audience, dear members of the press, I studied medicine at the University of Zurich, obtaining a doctorate in immunology and virology, specializing in internal medicine and cardiology, and I have 30 years of experience in diagnosing and treating acute respiratory infections, both in hospitals and intensive care, and for 23 years in my medical practice. In February 2020, I sat in my practice and I was amazed. Everything I had learned in medical school during scientific training and in practical medical work was turned upside down. Anyone with a sore throat no longer self-medicated and only went to see their GP if their symptoms increased, but instead ran to the nearest hospital demanding to be tested immediately and with a fear of perhaps dying, and not merely dying, but perhaps suffocating miserably. The prevailing corona narrative established itself worldwide over a very short period of time. At the same time, humanity was divided into supporters and opponents to an extent never experienced before. The corona narrative divides friendships, families, and even partnerships. Such a division is always an expression of the fact that a large part of humanity is not living in reality anymore, but is being caught up in a delusion imposed on us by selfish people. We must therefore ask ourselves whether we are still realists or perhaps deluded. And I believe that this question can only be answered by looking at reality as soberly as possible. Over the next 20 minutes, I will recap the corona narrative we presented in more detail during the May 28th press conference, counter some of the myths and the intellectual absurdities of the prevailing corona narrative with scientific facts, and in light of the November 28th vote, address the second and third G of the COVID test certificate, namely in particular the tested and recovered obligation. I will do this so that even if you are not a scientist or a physician, you can make an informed decision as to what further action seems right to you for yourself and for your loved ones. Reference on which I base my statements on are found in the press release on our website. The prevailing corona narrative goes like this. The world's been ravaged by a pandemic caused by a year-round killer virus since early 2020, a virus that can only be detected by means of the Coleman-Drosten TCPCR test, a virus that is spreading asymptomatically, even if epidemiologically relevant, against which there is no natural or cross-protective immunity, which triggers a disease, namely COVID-19 infections, which are barely treatable a virus that has become increasingly infectious and dangerous due to erratic mutations, and which can only be overcome by non-pharmacological measures that have never been applied before, such as antisocial distancing, masks worn in public spaces, contact tracing, isolation, quarantine, school closures and curfews, even for asymptomatic, previously healthy people, and by serial vaccination of the entire world population. All of the myths involved in the prevailing corona narrative are made up out of a fact-free vacuum. Based on the current state of science, these are my top 10. First of all, there has been no epidemic of COVID-19 epidemic of national scope in any country. There has been no global pandemic, and SARS-CoV-2 is not a killer virus affecting the general population. If the cases of death are correctly established and the number of people who died over a period of 28 days for any cause and had a positive DC-PCR test is substituted for the number of COVID-19 deaths, the infectious mortality rate is below that of influenza viruses, which are of course deadly to some people and, unlike SARS-CoV-2, sometimes deadly even for children. Secondly, the test indication, namely to test not only hospitalized critically ill patients with specific antiviral therapy needs in the Sentinella for respiratory infections and in an epidemiological study cohort, but even asymptomatic people, and moreover, only for one of all possible respiratory viruses in terms of differential diagnostics is simply wrong. Number three, the Coleman-Drosten RT-PCR test does not diagnose a SARS-CoV-2 infection or a COVID-19 disease or death. Number four, there is no epidemiologically relevant asymptomatic transmission of SARS-CoV-2. Thus, also, for SARS-CoV-2, all non-pharmacological measures beyond the proven effective non-pharmacological measures to contain the spread of respiratory viruses, hygiene, and self-isolation of ill persons are ineffective and definitely harmful. Number five, there is effective prophylaxis. For example, a healthy lifestyle, a large amount of social contacts, vitamin D3, and there's an effective therapy for COVID-19, for example, anti-inflammatory drugs, topical budesonide, hydrochloroquine, ivermectin, and anticoagulants. Number six, unlike influenza viruses, SARS-CoV-2 does not mutate erratically, but rather slowly and permanently. For this reason alone, even the most effective vaccines always lag behind the variants. Number seven, SARS-CoV-2 is not becoming more contagious and dangerous. Like all other respiratory viruses, it obeys the laws of evolution. Without human intervention, the variant that spreads most easily will prevail. That is why it is becoming more and more contagious, but less and less dangerous. Number eight, SARS-CoV-2, like all viral pathogens of acute respiratory infections, does not occur throughout the year, but rather seasonally in our mid-northern latitudes, that would be from November to April. What experts call the heroic overcoming of the pandemic caused by a killer virus by means of non-pharmacological measures and vaccination of the population is called end of the flu season by us physicians. Number nine, due to basic and cross-immunity, only about 10 to 20% of the population contracts seasonal corona and influenza viruses during each flu season. This also holds true for SARS-CoV-2. Therefore, an nth wave for respiratory virus is also biological impossibility. Rather, the corona 19 season is followed by that of corona 20 and now by that of corona 21. And most of us are cross-immune against this virus. The alleged pandemic caused by the alleged killer virus SARS-CoV-2 cannot be overcome by vaccinating the entire world population, including the immune and the recovered. The futility, ineffectiveness, and uncertainty of experimental mRNA and DNA injections has been explained to you in detail by Cathy Shippies. I may add that natural immunization works better and more sustainably than the best vaccine, and that immune or recovered people do not need basic immunization or a booster vaccine. Or, if you had gone through measles, mumps, or rubella as a child or had received a basic MMR immunization, did anyone ever recommend to you that you get vaccinated against measles, mumps, and rubella for a first time again? A pandemic caused by mass testing, mainly at least since the end of the 2020 flu season, can only come to an end if we stop the unscientific testing of even asymptomatic people. These are the main myths of the prevailing corona narrative. For over a year and a half, we, physicians and scientists, have not been allowed to debunk them publicly. If we allow ourselves to fulfill this moral duty, we are at best ignored and censored, at worst defamed, banned from practicing, or placed in institutions for the insane. And it is wrong to test symptomatic people for only one of all respiratory viruses. It is insane to do this only with a hypersensitive non-specific RT-PCR test with a cycle threshold above 35 without considering number of cycles, symptomatology, and clinical context. It's even more insane to mass test even asymptomatic previously healthy people in this way. And it is the height of insanity to administer unnecessary, ineffective, unsafe, experimental mRNA and DNA injections to the entire world population without regard to their immune status. This total insanity is possible with any respiratory virus. If we no longer test all people with a hypersensitive, low-specificity RT-PCR test that cross-reacts with other viruses for theoretically one RNA fragment of SARS-CoV-2, but for one of, say, influenza or metapneumoviruses, we will immediately have an influenza or metapneumovirus testing epidemic. From our point of view, the prevailing corona narrative presents itself like this. An endemicity of a seasonal Beta Corona cold war virus that naturally kills some people and becomes increasingly harmless through slow permanent mutation that has been inflated to the level of a pandemic caused by a year-round killer virus thanks to PCR, scare masks, and the myth of epidemiologically relevant asymptomatic transmission, which is becoming ever more dangerous through erratic mutations and can only be overcome with pointless, harmful, non-pharmacological interventions applied even to asymptomatic, previously healthy people, and by means of serial, unnecessary, ineffective, unsafe experimental mRNA and DNA injections for the entire world population. Does the second G in the 3G COVID certificate actually stand for tested? The Kormendrosten RT-PCR test does not diagnose an infection with SARS-CoV-2 or of illness or death from COVID-19. On November 28, 2020, an international group of 22 bioscientists, including three members of Altea, published an external peer review of the Kormendrosten paper. The formula based on which laboratories developed RT-PCR tests for SARS-CoV-2. In it, we declared that there were conflicts of interest, that an alleged peer review written within 24 hours was an absurdity, and that 10 fundamental scientific errors had been made. This most momentous medical publication of the year 2020, which can hardly be surpassed in terms of unscientificness, should never have been published. The Kormendrosten RT-PCR test instructions are poorly and vaguely fabricated, and there's a lack of validation and standardization. We know from a laboratory ring trial conducted in Germany that due to cross-reaction with other beta coronaviruses, the specificity of 98.6%, which corresponds to 1.4 false positives, and is already low in the absence of a virus, is reduced up to or down to 92.5%, corresponding to 7.6 false positives during the influenza season. Due to some layperson, these rates of false positive tests may seem low because they don't know what this means. They do know that in the virtual absence of a virus, a prevalence of zero, almost all positive RT-PCR tests will be false positives during the influenza season. Let me give you an example. If we test 1,000 men with a pregnancy test that is accurate to 99%, 1%, that is 10 tests, will be positive. Because of the prevalence of pregnancy of men in men of zero, these positive pregnancy tests are false positives. Although studies have shown that no cultural virus is present in samples with a CT value above 28, tests continue to be performed with cycle thresholds above 35, and their results are reported worldwide without reference to clinical symptoms. The Kormendrosten RT-PCR test is scientifically incorrect and serves only to create a case number epidemic. The Federal Office of Public Health's Situation Report on Virus Detection impressively demonstrates that the prevalence of SARS-CoV-2, bar in pink, is still close to zero at the end of the influenza season. Other respiratory viruses, especially rhinoviruses, depicted in the light blue bar, and influenza viruses, orange bar, are rampant, and therefore most alleged COVID illnesses are other viral respiratory infections mislabeled as COVID-19 by false positive PCR tests for SARS-CoV-2. Thus, the third G in the 3G COVID certificate actually stand for recovery. In their second year of study, every medical student learns about the basics of epidemiology. The students learn that in the event of a possible epidemic of national scope, a study cohort representative of the population must be formed immediately, its purpose being to record and monitor the number of cases, the severity of the disease, and the status of immunity. In this case, by determining antibodies and T-cell immunity. Thus, in April 2020, we would have already realized that there was no epidemic of national significance, presumably that almost everyone was already largely immune, and that there was zero scientific evidence for painful, extremely expensive, nonsensical interventions for the enactment of the epidemic law, for the drafting of the COVID law, and for a COVID certificate. Apparently, no one at the Federal Office of Public Health and at the Swiss National COVID-19 Science Task Force, which supports the government's approach, has knowledge of a second year, the knowledge of a second year medical student. For although 20 months have passed since the WHO declared the COVID pandemic, no such representative epidemiological surveillance cohort exists. Worse still, from week 13 to week 44, 2020, the Federal Office of Public Health has also put on ice Sentinella, the surveillance system of viral respiratory infections based on representative medical practices, thereby turning a blind eye to the total sovereignty in terms of interpretation of the arbitrarily manipulative PCR test case numbers. To consider someone with a positive Kormendrosten PCR test as recovered, but not so people with proven antibodies and or T-cell immunity to SARS-CoV-2 is simply scientifically wrong. Dear audience, members of the press, if you find our explanations too long and too complicated, please at least take a close look at this picture, which says more than 1,000 words. One quick glance at the near real-time monitoring of intensive care occupancy developed by the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology exposes the fundamental flaw in the prevailing corona narrative. And in each alleged wave, the same thing happens. Completely synchronously and to almost the same extent as the increase in the number of COVID patients, yellow curve, the number of non-COVID patients, green curve, falls in the intensive care units, although there are high reserves of intensive care beds, represented by the dotted line, throughout the alleged pandemic. At the end of each alleged wave, the same thing happens in reverse. Now, either we believe that a supernatural entity is postponing non-emergency major surgeries, otherwise viral pneumonias, bacterial or fungal pneumonias, myocardial infarctions, central pulmonary embolisms, cerebral strokes, or major car accidents with numerous serious injuries at the moment a COVID patient enters an intensive care unit, or maybe every patient is tested for SARS-CoV-2 on admission to hospital using the PCR test, which is unsuitable for diagnostic purposes. I believe rolling a dice would be cheaper. Depending on the test result, they are assigned to the green non-COVID patient or the yellow COVID patient curve, respectively. And other diagnoses are often misdiagnosed as COVID-19. This error occurs not so much in the intensive care units themselves, but rather in the direct reporting by the labs to the Federal Office of Public Health, which reports these and all other meaningless case numbers to the media, who then in turn bombards us with them around the clock. At least since April 2020, the total number of ICU patients, black curve, changes little due to this fundamental error in the corona narrative. This also explains why ICUs were not overburdened in any country, regardless of whether there are almost three times as many ICU beds in relation to the population, for example in Germany, or only about half as many, for example in Sweden, as in Switzerland. Now, the people responsible must have known this, otherwise they would not have cut ICU capacity worldwide since April 2020, in Switzerland in particular, from over 1,500 down to 900, and not built up more. Instead of redistributing 1 million billion taxpayers' money from the bottom and the middle to the top, we would have recommended investing a fraction of this amount in recruiting retired ICU staff and in increasing the number of part-time ICU staff. Should you have a better explanation for the almost perfect symmetry of the yellow and green curves with an imaginary mirror axis located between the two, we will be the first to examine it closely and publicly apologize for these consequently fake news that we are spreading. It seems that the number of COVID patients is on the rise again, and for the first time, the number of non-COVID patients is not dropping synchronously, but rather continues to increase. We hope and wish that the latter is not a result of the severe side effects of the experimental mRNA injections. Dear audience, members of the press, thank you for your attention. I now have the great honor to pass the floor to Mr. Robert Kennedy Jr. Sorry, no, that was a mistake. Sorry, to Professor Kruse.
Yeah, it is wunderbar, Sie hier zu haben. Es ist ein Privileg, Sie in der Schweiz zu haben. Sie sind so weit gereist, um hierher zu kommen.
You're a lawyer, and you've been traveling around the world tirelessly campaigning for the health of children, for a better protection of the environment, in particularly of water. You are founder and member of the board of directors of the Organization for the Defense of Children, an organization operating on a worldwide level. You are a member of many organizations that aim to protect the environment. Time magazine has called you one of the heroes of our planet because you have contributed to the river keeping initiative to protect the waters of the Hudson River. You are a lawyer and practice in a law practice specializing on environmental damage, Morgan Morgan. And beyond that, you are a famous book author and have published a long list of books, including Crimes Against Nature, a New York Times bestseller. Your reputation as a staunch defender of the environment dates back to a long time. You've also participated in many court cases. You have made a major contribution to defeat by Monsanto. And a few years ago only, you have guaranteed the success of important cases. You are now involved in the safety of or researching the safety of vaccines, 5G, and you are tirelessly fighting against tech giants. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., you inspire people all around the world to stand up and contribute jointly to the health of both us and our children and the protection of our environment. You have contributed with an article on children's health defense, referring in that article to the current vote that we are about to embark on here in Switzerland, and you warned of the risks to democracy of this dangerous law. We're very happy to have you here, and we're very happy to for you to honor us with your presence. We need any support we can get in this area of fear where our basic constitutional rights are being stamped on and threatened.
Catherine Austin Fitz, as Assistant Secretary, you work for the Minister of Housing and Urban Development, George W. Bush. You were a successful investment banker and got to know the global financial system from the inside. You developed a critical view of this global financial system, and early on, you started fighting in order to stop the criminal structures of the centralized global criminal financial system. Back in 1999, in a remarkable publication, you took up this topic and spread the word. It was the financial coup d'etat paper that I'm referring to. And that was quite courageous. And recently, you said in a report that this made you an enemy of the state. And this caused you quite a few criminal investigations, which you had to undergo. You are the founder and president of the Solari Report, of which you work in two directions. On the one hand, you contribute and you try to achieve a human civilization with a decentralized monetary system. And you support and advise people with regards to investments that are outside this organized criminal system. And last but not least, you also were in a film during lockdown, which was shown on YouTube several million times worldwide, and in which you also referred to the injection fraud, fraud caused by or in relation to vaccinations. Catherine Austin Fix, welcome. Welcome on the panel.
Of 100% of all assets, ultimately. So what happens here? For many, many years, most of us have grown up in a world in the Western democracies where we have a balance of power between the bankers and the people. The central bankers control monetary policy, and the people vote for an electorate that controls fiscal policy. Now what we're watching with COVID laws all around the world is the central bankers moving in and exercising essentially a coup d'etat where they take control of fiscal policy as well. And again, with the advances in digital technology, vaccine passports will not be about health. Vaccine passports are part of a financial transaction control grid that will absolutely end human liberty in the West. For many years, I have fought and written against central control of the financial system. We've centralized more and more capital, more and more control. And we've done it with tactics called divide and conquer. And we've all experienced many different divide and conquer tactics. You need a new, more venal divide and conquer, and we can't let that happen. Because ultimately, we're talking about all of our liberties, all of our human rights, all of our property rights. So, I would plead with you to look behind. So, listen to what's been said today, and look behind what these laws are really about, and where the vaccine passports lead. The vaccine passports, along with the digital control system, are the end of human liberty in the West. And as I said, this referendum on November 28th will be a very important signal to the world as to whether the most educated and intelligent populations in the world can see through the ruse of the plague laws into what is really happening and step up to protect our rights and the future of human civilization. So this is not about democracy versus fascism. This is about freedom versus slavery. Because when you institute a complete digital financial control, you are talking something about something much worse than any fascism we have seen yet in our history. So please vote no on November 28th for yourself, for your family, for your right to preserve and grow family wealth, your right to have health freedom, transportation freedom, labor freedom, but also to preserve your role as a lighthouse for democracy worldwide. And again, I just want to thank the tremendous leadership here who's been leading this effort in Switzerland and on behalf of all of us worldwide. Thank you very much. You too, Thomas.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. I'm happy to be here. I apologize for my voice, which usually gets better as I speak a little. I'm very, very proud to be here with all these extraordinary Swiss leaders, people who are standing up for democracy, but also my colleague here, Catherine Austin Fitz. And this is the first time we've met in person, although we've just talked over podcasts, and she's an important leader in helping me build children's health defense and helping organize the resistance. She's a unique individual. She's really an international treasure. She came up at the center of what we would call the deep state as a high official at Dillon Reed, which is one of the leading banking houses in our country, and working as Assistant Secretary of Treasury at HUD, and has spent a lifetime exposing the corruption in the banking system, in the federal banking system, and she's paid a very, very high price for that. So I want to thank her for her leadership, and you know, she understands what's happening, mechanisms from a very, very high level of what we're seeing here, which is this coup d'etat, global coup d'etat against liberal democracy in all of the, in Europe, in North America, in Australia, Canada, all over the world. I want to make one comment on the medical issue, and I'm not a doctor, but I read very, very carefully as a litigator. I read the preclinical stuff. Trial studies, and one of the data points that was not mentioned here, to me, is one of the data points we've paid a lot of attention to in the United States, which is Pfizer is the only company now that has received approval by the FDA. So we've looked very carefully at their data points and their report. And Pfizer had originally was going to do a 3-year trial, but it cut it to 6 months. As we now know, the vaccines lose effectiveness after 6 months, and it would be very difficult for them to justify an approval if they allowed the study to go more than 6 months. So they unblinded the study after 6 months, and they gave the vaccine to the placebo group. So the study is effectively over. But they did have to publish a study to justify their approval, their licensure, by the FDA. And one of the key tables in that study is a table called S4. And that shows one of the, probably to me, the most important data point, which is all-cause mortality. Were there more people who died in the placebo group or in the vaccine group? Here's what that graph says, and you have to also read the footnotes to the graph because they omitted some information, and you can see why they did. There were roughly 22,000 people in the vaccine group. There were 22,000 people roughly in the placebo group. At the end of 6 months, there was one death from COVID in the vaccine group. And there were two deaths from COVID of the 22,000 people in the placebo group. So Pfizer was able to tell FDA and the American public, this vaccine is 100% effective against death, because two is 100% of one. What most Americans, when they hear that data point, what they believe is if they take the vaccine, they have 100% chance of not getting COVID. But that's not what it means. What it means is you have to give 22,000 vaccines to avert one death from COVID. And so you have to make sure that nobody dies from those 22,000 vaccines. Unfortunately, what their data show is that in the vaccine group, there were 20 deaths. Among the 22,000 people over 6 months, 20 of them died. In the placebo group, 14 died. What that indicates, if you get the vaccine, and this is what Pfizer's data is saying, you have a 48% greater chance of dying over the next 6 months. You have half your chance of dying of COVID. But in the placebo group, there was one person who died of a heart attack. In the vaccine group, there were five people who died of a heart attack. So what it indicates is that if you take the vaccine, you have a 500% greater chance of dying of a heart attack over the next 6 months, according to Pfizer's data. And what it also indicates is that for every life that they save from COVID, four people are dying of heart attacks. And that's not a good bargain. I want to say the principal point, the point that I came to Switzerland to talk about. You have a referendum on November 28th. Because Switzerland is not part of the EU, people of this country have retained their democratic rights to vote directly on the law. So this is the only country in Europe where democracy has a chance to stand up to what we call this global coup d'etat against democracy. And what we've seen since the beginning of COVID is very strange. We did not see a medical response to the pandemic. We did not see doctors like Dr. Fauci going on TV and telling people to increase vitamin D use, to avoid chemical residues in their food, to lose weight, to have lots of social interactions, to reduce stress in their lives, to try to stay outside and get plenty of sunshine, to exercise. We never saw any of that. It was a militarized and monetized response from the beginning. It was telling people, imposing draconian controls on human behavior with no scientific rationale given. And in our country, we saw a direct assault on our Bill of Rights, particularly beginning with freedom of speech. We have amendments to our Constitution that guarantee rights to the American people. The First Amendment, the constitutional framers, the people who wrote our Constitution, put the most important right in the First Amendment, which was the right to freedom of speech. If you don't, because John Adams, James Madison, Thomas Jefferson said, if government can restrict your speech, they can commit any atrocity. They can get rid of all of your other rights. And they began using their alliance with the social media companies and the big media behemoths. They began censoring any criticism of government policies and any criticism or questions about a novel, zero-liability, experimental pharmaceutical product. Once they got rid of freedom of speech, so that people like me are not allowed to talk about it, about or criticize these policies or ask questions about these policies, none of these doctors are allowed to question these policies. People who are injured by vaccines cannot question the policies, cannot talk about their injuries in public. It cannot be reported by the press in our country. Once they got rid of that amendment, they went after religious freedoms. They closed all the churches in America for a year with no public hearings, no explanation, no science given. They kept the liquor stores open as essential businesses. And I have no problem with that. But the liquor stores are not in the Constitution. The churches are. They got rid of private property rights. They closed a million businesses for a year without just compensation, without due process of law. There was no hearings. There was no science debated. They just shut them down. They got rid of jury trials. The Sixth and Seventh Amendment guaranteed jury trials in our country. Here's what the Seventh Amendment says. No American shall be deprived of the right of a jury, of a trial before a jury of his peers in cases or controversy exceeding $25 in value. There is no pandemic exception. And by the way, the people who wrote our Constitution knew all about pandemics, because during the Revolutionary War, we had a smallpox pandemic that sidelined George Washington's army for 3 months in New England, and a malaria epidemic that sidelined the army of Virginia. So his two armies were both sidelined by pandemics. So the framers who wrote the Constitution knew all about pandemics, and they did not put an exception to pandemics. They got rid of due process of law, which they've done in all the countries in Europe. Instead of having public hearings where officials have to publish the proposed rule, they have to do some kind of environmental assessment that explains the rationale for the rule. They have to do a cost-benefit analysis that shows all of the science behind the that justifies the rule. It shows all the people who are going to be hurt by the rule, all the people who are going to gain from the rule. All of that has to be disclosed in a transparent way. And then you have public hearings where people can come and say, I have my own science. I have my own experts. Let's have this debate. Democracy flourishes on the free flow of information. Free speech is sunlight and water and fertilizer for democracy. We need to have ideas that can triumph in the marketplace of ideas as the basis for our policies. All that has been obliterated. Instead, we have unelected technocrats, medical technocrats who we know are captured and corrupted by the pharmaceutical industry and the banking interests. And they are simply telling us, put on the mask, lock down, social distance, shut down the economy, and they have demolished democracy. They have obliterated the middle class throughout the world. They have robbed us of our freedoms. And the one place, the front line in this battle, if we are going to win, is here in Switzerland. And it occurs, the big battle occurs on November 28th. Went for in the one instance across the globe, we had this, all of our liberal democracies pivot suddenly and obliterate democracy. The one place where the people of a nation can stand up and say, we are not going to be your slaves. We are going to take back control of our government. We are going to reclaim our sovereignty. We are going to rebuild democracy. The one place that can happen is Switzerland. And if Switzerland, if we win, if democracy wins this vote in Switzerland, it will spread virally across the globe. If we lose here, we lose a lot of hope. So it's very, very important for the people of Switzerland to stand up and say, it's not that we don't believe that COVID is not dangerous. We have all different. It's not that we don't believe that vaccines may help. Some people may believe that. That's okay. You can believe in vaccines or against vaccines, but we all need to believe in democracy. And we all need to believe to respect each other and to tolerate each other and to say we are going to build communities that are dignified, that respect all of our citizens, and that make sure that all those diverse voices can be heard in the political process. We are not going to turn our government over to pharmaceutical industries, to the big tech data titans from Silicon Valley, to these medical technocrats, and to the banking system. you think about this. I got expelled from Instagram because of vaccine misinformation. But Instagram and Facebook cannot point to one single erroneous statement that I ever made. Everything we post is vetted. It is sourced and cited to government databases or peer-reviewed publications. When they use the term vaccine misinformation, they are using it as a euphemism for any statement that departs from official government policies and pharmaceutical industry profit-taking. It has nothing to do whether it's true or false. It only has to do with what the political implications are. And who is doing this censorship? It's government officials in league with Bill Gates, with Larry Ellison, with Mark Zuckerberg, with Sergey Brin from Google, and with all of these internet titans. They have engineered not only the destruction of our democracy and our civil rights, but they have engineered the biggest shift of wealth in human history. $3.8 trillion from working people to these handful of billionaires, many of them from Silicon Valley. This pandemic has impoverished the world and created 500 new billionaires. And those are the people who are strip mining our economies and making themselves rich. And is it a coincidence that these are the same people who are censoring criticism of the government policies that are bringing them trillions of dollars? People aren't stupid. We can see what's happening. We can ask the question, cui bono? And the answer is the people who are benefiting are the people who are squeezing away our constitutional rights and engineering the destruction of democracy worldwide. Switzerland is the front line for this battle. We need all the Swiss people to come out, not just for Switzerland, but for the entire world, for everybody, every man, woman, and child who loves democracy globally, who respects their fellow man or woman. Switzerland is the front line battle for reclaiming those rights. Thank you.
There's also hope coming from the United States, looking at the many member states that have get rid of the measures and have a seemingly normal life without any health complications from COVID. So we take also a lot of evidence from these examples.
Yeah, I would add just one noteworthy fact. There is no difference. There have been many, many studies now. I'm comparing the states of the United States that impose very, very draconian lockdowns and those with laissez-faire policies. And, for example, Florida, which was very loose, and California, which are similarly sized states, and Florida generally did better. They were pretty much equal, but slightly better for Florida, which has a much older population. Oh, and Wisconsin and Minnesota, which are right next to each other, very similar demographically, the states that had looser lockdowns tend to do slightly better. So the lockdowns are not helping us. The lockdowns are doing nothing. All they're doing is destroying democracy and impoverishing working people, stripping the middle class of wealth, and transferring it to billionaires.
Mein Name ist Philipp Kruse, ich bin Rechtsanwalt, seit 1997 in Zürich, spezialisiert auf Steuerrecht. Ich bin Vater von zwei Kindern, 55 Jahre alt. Seit etwas mehr als einem Jahr setze ich mich ein für einen evidenz-, vernunft- und verfassungskonformen Umgang mit diesem Phänomen Covid-19. Gemeinsam mit vielen anderen Anwälten hier in der Schweiz, aber auch in Österreich und in Deutschland spreche ich mich ab, tauschen wir Informationen aus und reichen Beschwerden ein, Klage um Klage. Ich selbst habe jetzt etwa 1400 Seiten Rechtsschriften eingereicht. Immer mit dem Ziel, staatliche Willkür zurückzubinden und den Rechten von Kindern und von den Erwachsenen zum Durchbruch zu verhelfen. Ich unterstütze Aletheia als Jurist gemeinsam mit anderen.
As a lawyer together with other lawyers, and I am a legal expert for the other organization, the Friends of the Constitution.
Die wesentlichen Kritikpunkte.
Now, let us look at what can be criticized on in terms of COVID law that we're going to be voting on the 28th of November. This vote was brought on by a historic and democratic tour de force. 187,000 signatures were collected over a period of just a few weeks to make sure that this referendum can take place. 50,000 votes only would have been necessary. This law that we're going to be voting on provides the Federal Council with special powers to be able to fight off an apparently particularly big threat, and is given the power to intervene in the private life of all Swiss citizens. And what is special in this, before I start talking in detail about the law, the really special thing here is that today already we have many instances in Switzerland who are responsible for checking on measures introduced by the Federal Council or the Parliament, for example, have not done their job. And they have not examined the legal basis for this law. They have not analyzed whether really there is such a huge threat making it necessary for providing the Federal Council with additional and major powers going beyond their existing powers. On the contrary, and that brings us right in the middle of the new COVID law, every single change implemented by the Parliament shows that the Parliament wants to implement this law immediately because it believes that the threat is indeed so big that we cannot wait for justice to take its normal course, for political procedures to take their normal course, and that we need a special law to be able to fight the pandemic. This means that any amendment to the law, and every parliamentary debate showed this ever since September 2020, every change, every amendment to this law is an expression of the will of the Parliament saying that they really believe that there's such a major threat. And this is what the law is based on. It's based on this fear of a threat and not of a scientific evaluation. So this is a first violation of the constitutional rules of law. Now, my main point of criticism, let me start with the biggest criticism. Why do we have to reject this law? It's obvious that this law, in addition to what we've had before the law came into force, will violate and restrict basic democratic rules in a major way. Let me quote the two major provisions of this law, Article 3b regarding testing and contract tracing measures, and Article 6a, which only in principle describes the COVID certificate. which is supposed to be the legal base, to give the Federal Council the possibility to restrict areas of public life, restaurants and other institutions by introducing this COVID certificate. Now let's talk about Alcatraz 3B, contact tracing. The provision says that the Swiss government will provide Switzerland with a functioning and efficient contact tracing system. Let's talk about this in detail later. What are we dealing with here? We are dealing with a violation of data protection on a colossal level. There is no delimitation of the possibilities given to the authorities, and there's no control mechanisms. What many of us don't know is that the Swiss Supreme Court is not competent to check parliamentary or laws passed by the parliament. So the Supreme Court is not giving the possibility to check what is being implemented here. Therefore, we have to point out the fact that any delimitation of this contact tracing system is missing. This means that potential long-term abuse is made possible. And constant checks of citizens are going to become normal. They will be considered normal in a very short time. But Article 6A is even more dangerous. It's supposed to be the legal base for the famous COVID certificate that should enable us to prove that we are either tested, recovered, or vaccinated. Now, let's have a closer look at this. Legally, this wording is not precise enough, it's not specific enough to give the Federal Council the possibility to establish this compulsory COVID certificate for any industry and any organization. Legally, the wording had to be much more precise. It should say the Federal Council can restrict access to activities of public life, of social and economic and private life based on the submission of a COVID certificate. But that's not what it says. And then, in addition, the law makes it compulsory for organizers and restaurant owners to check this certificate. So the law should say the Federal Council can make it compulsory for organizers or restaurant owners, for example, to check those certificates. So that's my point number one. The legal base is insufficient. Second point, this certificate, as we've heard before, is not a proven means to prevent epidemiological events. As we've heard before, the vaccine does not efficiently protect against infection. Because we know, and we've heard this for months and seen it with our own eyes, vaccinated people can pass on the infection just as unvaccinated people. And as regards the test, the WHO has said its information notice from November 2020 and January 2021. WHO has said that a positive test is not sufficient for proving some kind of significant infection with COVID. So the certificate really makes no use and is no means to protect us against a danger of an epidemic. In addition, the certificate means that people, that it refers or has to do or results in massive side effects. We know that many people have suffered side effects after the vaccine, and as regards testing, the Federal Council has said that as of the 16th November, no PCR tests will only be accepted if the tip of the test device reaches the end, the far back of the nose. And any physician knows that untrained people can cause massive damage to the nose if they stick the swab far, far into the nose. So this test is damaging to our health and therefore disproportional. But in addition, this measure means that healthy people are excluded from public life on a long-term basis. This means that we are dealing with coercion, and coercion is a system of incentives that is being punished by penal law. There is no valid reason for the introduction of the COVID certificate. It's disproportional. It's unsuitable, even damaging to people's health. The certificate means that public life is negatively affected in a long-term basis, and it's based on a criminal system of incentives. And with that, many civil liberties are being trampled on and or limited without sufficient legal base. I'm talking about the right to physical integrity, in particular. Protection of children and youth is also trampled on. The ban on discrimination is also violated because there's no valid reason for creating such a massive imbalance between people with or without the vaccine. Respect of human dignity is also violated, and the law on proportionality and arbitrality is also violated. This test and both the test and the certificate do not make a valid contribution to fighting the alleged pandemic. And you have to also consider that many entrepreneurs have lost their assets, lost their property because they will refuse to get tested. Employees are being harassed by their employers. We are getting calls regularly on a daily basis by people who are telling them that their employer is harassing them and forcing them to get vaccinated. One example is Swiss Airline. As of the 1st of December, only pilots will be allowed to fly Swiss airplanes that have been tested twice. So, and this does not bring me to the end of the list of civil rights that have been violated, but unfortunately for time reasons I will have to stop here. So, I said civil rights are being trampled on and restricted, but another important reason why I'm asking you to vote against this law is that there is a very strange wording in Article 1 of this law. Normally, an epidemic is evaluated based on factual and scientific criteria, for example, severe causes, number of hospitalizations, number of deaths. And these figures have to be significantly above previous year's levels. So what does Article 1A and Paragraph 1 say? Article 1 allows the Federal Council to use its own criteria, political criteria, for evaluating the pandemic. So the Swiss government is giving a blanco check when it comes to evaluating whether this, we are living a pandemic or not. So the article said that the Swiss Federal Council is going to define the rules based on which public life can be restricted itself. So that's scandalous, I believe. The government will be allowed to use not scientific and factual criteria, but rather political criteria. The Federal Council is being given the power to extend the pandemic as its own wish, and for example, by choosing criteria such as test numbers, R values, extrapolations, or, as we have just seen, occupancy of hospital beds. We know that the occupancy in hospital beds depends on how many beds there are. If you start cutting down on hospital beds, occupancy is going to go up. And I'm wondering whether this is going to be one of the criteria used by the Federal Council to extend the pandemic, and maybe we will hear next that the vaccination rate is going to also be used as a criteria for the extension of the pandemic measures. And that brings me to my last point. Let me summarize. We have seen that civil rights are being restricted in a way we've never seen before. The Federal Council is given competences that it has never been provided with before. We've seen that these powers have been transferred to the Federal Council by the Parliament, and the Parliament is waiving its right to control these competences. The Parliament is not going to be able to perform the necessary checks of the government as long as this law is in force. In summary, this means that this law is going to disrupt our checks and balances, our separation of powers. It's going to weaken the checks and balances. And the primacy of the legislative, that was a system that was valid until now, is going to be transformed into the primacy of the executive. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is a constitutional reform or amendment. It's not just that the COVID law violates the Constitution, but the law is also affecting the Constitution and, in fact, amending it. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is, in short, what I believe to be wrong in this law. That brings me to the end of my presentation. This law is going to change Switzerland in a way we've never seen before, and it's going to do this for good. Why am I saying this? It will be theoretically possible to uphold this law until 2031. We're moving away from a free democratic state, away from a working separation of powers, and away from a valid respect of basic rights, away from equal rights, and towards a hierarchic power structure with no functioning separation of power, with no checks and balances. There will be arbitrariness, a disrespect of dignity of people, and a division of society. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is going to be installed for good. We're going to live in a totalitarian system. Who could stop this development if not us? And where else in the world are we going to have the possibility to vote on this potential change if not here in Switzerland? It's our historic responsibility here in Switzerland to make the right decision. We have never defended our democracy with weapons, but on the 28th of November, We will have to defend our democracy with our voices, with our votes in favor of our country. And that brings me to the end of my presentation. Thank you very much for your attention.
Audience, on behalf of Aletheia, I would like to summarize this press conference, and I would like to thank all the speakers who expertly showed how scientific facts and findings can help us end this crisis, if only you want. Kati Shepes talked about the vaccination, this gene injection, which is unsafe, unnecessary, and full of side effects. And if you're unlucky, you risk breaking, just like a stuffed cigarette. And consider what is happening there. Thomas Binder focused on the pandemic and the PCR tests. And he said that the term pandemic is actually misleading. He said that tests are usually not used, not analyzed in the right way, that they do not work, and we demand that tests should only be used for symptomatic people if there's need for extended diagnostics, and otherwise they should be done away with. Another demand is that these gene injections, which are ineffective, unsafe, and unnecessary, be stopped. Better yesterday than tomorrow. Catherine Austin Fitz called Switzerland a lighthouse, a beacon of democracy. But unfortunately, the pandemic is also ruling there, and she called upon us to take good care of our country. The totalitarian measures which come out of the sea like an animal eating up everything is being coordinated by the banks, she said, and lead to a split between different groups of society, one that has never been seen in this scope before. Today, there are the vaccinated and the unvaccinated, and this brings the risk of a loss of all freedoms, a walk into slavery, an end to democracy, and she called upon us to vote no on the 28th of November. Because this could have traumatic consequences. And with regards to the media, this means we should stop censoring, this propaganda should be stopped, we should return to well-balanced complaint reporting. Robert Kennedy, who, like Catherine Austin, was a great pleasure to have here, talked about a coup d'etat happening in Switzerland. The pharmaceutical industry, technocrats, scientific technocrats, industrials, and balance sheet technocrats abuse politics, manipulate studies, and the corrupt politicians working for, or just listening too much to the pharmaceutical industry. They treat today do no longer work with the people in view. They seem to all suffer from a Stockholm syndrome. They defend the attackers. So Robert says we should protect our democracy, rebuild it. The world needs us. The courageous Swiss, and it's an honor to hear that, and he also said, vote no to the COVID Act. Philip Kruse asked the question, what is the state of law? Are we in a state of law, or are we in a criminal state? Which undermines the entire Swiss constitution without taking into account democratic processes. Are we in a state where the fundamental rights no longer count? And, dear audience, you need to be aware that politicians, they just ignore the 150,000 people who died from vaccinations. More than 55,000 worldwide who died from the injection. And this will all fall back on us. And apart from that, we know, do we really need a new conspiracy theory? Well, the previous conspiracy theories have all proven to be right, so maybe we need a new one. So we need to do away with the task force, because they only are henchmen of the pharmaceutical industry. We need to demand an independent investigation by a committee that is not part of the parliament. Alataya states that, Alataya also focuses on doctors and calls upon them to remember what they swore when they started the Oath of Hippocrate, the Geneva Convention, the Nuremberg Codex, and think of the human trials during the 30s and 40s. Do we really want to have the same again? Remember the medical ethics that we are committed to. And Alataya would also like to recommend the public to seek more information on everything that's been said, to take that into account and say no to discrimination, no to the big powers of the Swiss Federal Currency, to a certificate that is ineffective and only brings damage, and no to the COVID Act on the 28th of November. And with this, I'd like to thank you once more for your attention, for listening to us, and for the many speeches that we heard. And I'd like to wish you all the best. And thank you. Goodbye.